You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Kevin Annette. Kevin is a Canadian writer and former minister of the United Church of Canada. He graduated from the University of British Columbia with a bachelor's degree in anthropology and a master's degree in political science. Kevin has written two books on the subject of residential school abuse in Canada. In 2006, he produced a documentary on this topic called Unrepentant. Additionally, he created and hosted Hidden from History, a public affairs and human rights program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio from 2001 until the station shut him down in 2010. His book, Hidden No Longer, Genocide in Canada, Past and Present, details the rampant cleansing of the Indigenous peoples throughout the ages. You can find his work at these websites, www.hiddennolonger.com and www.itccs.org. So let's welcome Kevin to the show now. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Lance. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Anybody that has done the work that you've done and is speaking out the truth, as you are speaking it, has my hat tipped. So I thought maybe we could begin by starting with how you stumbled into the crimes against the Indigenous peoples.
Well, you know, like a lot of white Canadians, I never had any idea of a lot of the details of this horrible crime. But I began to learn it firsthand 20 years ago last summer when I got to the west coast of Vancouver Island as a newly ordained United Church minister. Literally the first native home I visited, I heard these stories, you know, of children being killed. The very first native man I spoke to said that his best friend had been killed and buried in the hills behind the Indian boarding school run by the United Church. I began to talk about that with people in the church. They pretty much told me that it was made up, that the Indians were just lying about it, not to listen to them, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as more and more people told me this stuff, I couldn't ignore it. I began to invite them into my church. We began to hear more of these stories. But what really sealed my fate is when I found out that all the churches, Catholic and Protestant, that had a long history of grabbing native land, you know, the early missionaries would grab the land, and then later on the church would sell it off to big corporate interests, you know, logging companies like Weyerhaeuser in Seattle, and all sorts of corporations, you know, for a lot of money. And I found out about this one case involving the Yahouzid Indians on the West Coast, and I wrote to the United Church about it, and I was out of that pulpit quicker than you can spit. I mean, it was about 4 weeks, and I was out without any cause, nothing. You know, because I had exposed one of these corporate backroom deals in stolen native land. But then native survivors began to come to me with stories of more horrible stuff. And after I lost my family, actually, I lost my wife and kids over this because the church went to my ex-wife and I offered to help her with her divorce if she'd leave me. So, I mean, there was all this really weird stuff happening, which I couldn't figure out at first. And then finally, one day I realized they were very worried at the stories that were being told to me and the people I was working with. Eventually, I began to work over the years with these people. We forced the government to eventually admit a lot of this stuff. We did documentaries, held tribunals. And now we're working with people all over the world who suffered many similar crimes in other countries, often at the hands of the Catholic Church. But, you know, these same kinds of crimes happened everywhere. And we're organizing a tribunal now to look into it. And we've even set up a common law court to try the Pope and others for these crimes against humanity. So it's kept me busy. Certainly being something I wouldn't have expected 20 years ago.
Right, right. No kidding. Can you give us a brief history of the scope of the atrocities with some of the details so that people get an idea of what kinds of things were commonplace in these Indian schools and how that relates to atrocities that are global in nature?
Yeah. Well, it was a plan of out-and-out genocide, and people can look at the evidence themselves. I've got 20 years of research posted up at the site hiddennolonger.com, where you can also see a documentary film we did about this in 2007. Eyewitnesses are describing these things. Every definition of genocide under international law occurred in these schools. Children were killed. They were sterilized in special hospitals. They were used as slave labor. About half these children never came back. The government's official statistics for over half a century is that the average death rate was 30 to 50%, if you can imagine that. I mean, that's higher than in the Nazi death camps in Europe, frankly. Mm-hmm. And it was because they were using these places to deliberately infect kids with disease and never treat them. There were even letters from government Indian agents describing them seeing this happening. But then the government would allow the churches to keep doing it. And this carried on right up to 1996. There's at least 50,000 children who never came back. And, you know, this is not about the occasional kid getting raped and hurt. This is out-and-out extermination. And, there still hasn't, in Canada, not one person's ever gone to trial, let alone go to jail for the death of one of these kids. So We're just beginning to open this stuff up, and the government and the Catholic and Protestant churches are doing their best to keep it all concealed.
Mm-hmm. Well, so this isn't going to go away. This is not just a flash in the pan moment that's going to be silenced in history once and for all, and the winners who have the most power and money are going to just steamroll over it, is it?
No, not at all, because to give you an example of that, one of the reasons that Pope stepped down a few weeks ago is because his Secretary of State's office was served with a note from a European government that we have been giving all of this information to for several years now. And they finally came to the conclusion, along with a number of other lawyers in Europe, that, yeah, the Vatican is where the buck stops, that they were ordering the cover-up of these crimes as well as the commission of these crimes. They are responsible for crimes against humanity, and they're going to act on it. So, you know, the Pope could hide out in the Vatican, but as of February 28th, he's a German citizen again, as he always was, of course. Even heads of state can be tried for war crimes. That's something that the Nuremberg precedents established, that nobody is above the law, even the church, even though they have their own so-called canon law system, which orders priests to cover up and protect child rapists in their own system. There's a higher law, you know, moral and international law, that says nobody can do that. So they can't back their way out of this one. It's too huge. Everywhere I go in the world, and I've gone to over a dozen countries in the last 3 or 4 years working with people like that who've suffered these crimes. And like Ireland, for example, the Catholic Church ran these things called Magdalene laundries, where young girls who got pregnant lost their baby. They were just taken away and put in foster homes. And they never saw them again, and they were put to work in these sweatshops, where a lot of them died, the same death rate that you often found in these Indian boarding schools. And again, the church is not held accountable. The government in Ireland, like in Canada, got together and indemnified the church for any wrongdoing so that they could never get sued. And, they think a little bit of apology and money is going to satisfy people, but it isn't. I see an enormous wave of outrage building all over the world about this stuff. And, there definitely is going to be some major changes happening.
Well, I know that there was a huge pedophile scandal that broke recently that's probably been known about in the UK that was part of the Jimmy Savile scandal. I don't know where that's presently at, because we don't get a lot of news on this kind of thing. We just get stuff about movie stars over here. But there's another scandal that seems to be breaking in the Netherlands about the global sex trade and the theft of children, male and female, and the use of them in blackmailing politicians at the highest level. So This apparently is something that is going on at the highest levels, and We know that the Pope has been has implemented the movement of various members of the church who were participating in a pedophile ring, and has kept that secret. So what do you know about these things, and what can we look for to come out if it does come out in the news?
Well, it's coming out, but these are tips of an iceberg that the media lets us see. The reality is child trafficking is a huge industry all over the world. It's got a lot of government and judicial backing. The Jimmy Savo cases are, they show that the elites are involved in it for sure. But the thing to realize, like you say, it's very lucrative, and it's also a political weapon. There was a newspaper in the States out of Washington called Rock Creek Free Press, and about 5 years ago they printed a disclosure by the CIA that they admitted that as early as the late 60s they have used child trafficking and pedophile networks as a way to blackmail politicians, especially in places like Thailand, where they've admitted using the child sex tourist industry there as a way to blackmail visiting senators and congressmen from the States. Mm-hmm. There was an American investigator called Sean Parliament who was on the trail of this story, and he was arrested by the Bangkok police, and then he, quote, jumped out of a 13-floor building in Bangkok. They just tossed him out the window because he had the names of the people in the government and the CIA involved in this network. You know, so, I mean, it shows you it isn't just random loonies. It's definite a whole industry, like drugs and arms. It's very lucrative and supported by governments. So you also have a system in the Catholic Church, like I mentioned, where any child rapist knows you can get ordained as a Catholic priest and you'll get away with it. You're never going to be convicted in the church for it because the church doesn't consider it a crime, just a sin. And what the crime is, according to canon law, is to talk about it. It's like the mafia law of omerta, of silence. The mafia and the Catholic Church are pretty much the same organism, as we see from the Vatican Bank laundering their money all the time.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, we're dealing with major criminals in power. That's the reality.
Yes. One of the priests being considered to replace the Pope is Cardinal Peter Turkson, and he said that rampant pedophilia is largely caused by gay priests. Now, since girls are also part of the pedophilia scandals, how is this possible, and what are your findings?
Well, no, that's a complete distraction. As a matter of fact, there's a story circulating in the press now that there was a gay clergy network in the Vatican, and that's what caused Ratzinger to step down, the scandal about that. That's a fake story they issued to distract and draw people's attention from the two main reasons he stepped down, which is the Vatican Bank collapse. I mean, they've had their credit canceled on them, and Ratzinger is deeply involved in criminal actions related to the Vatican Bank, and also the child trafficking that he's personally involved in. His own brother, as a bishop in Munich, was involved in child trafficking, and he's protected him. Our information out of Rome is that Ratzinger is being set up to be the scapegoat, and that's to take the heat off a lot of the other cardinals who are involved in this, like Cardinal Bertone, who is more likely to become the next pope because he's kind of the Vatican insider who's Secretary of State and kind of manipulating everything behind the scene. The popes are pretty much figureheads. It's the Jesuit financial control and the curia, the major cardinals in the College of Cardinals that are the power in there, plus all their overseas banking connections, which, you know, call the shots. So, I mean, those are the, you know, it's like with any crime, you follow the money, you find out who the real actors are.
So what do you make of the banking scandals at the Vatican's World Bank, and where is the money, and what's going on there? I mean, we know that there's the criminal cartels are involved, and politics and corporations and the rest of
right.
it. What are some of these dark secrets that have been covered by the church?
I'll tell you one thing. There's a good book people can go to. It might be out of print now, but it's by David Yallop, Yallop. It's called In God's Name, The Murder of John Paul I. He was a pope who lasted about a month back in 1978. His first act, I mean, they somehow elected an honest guy, and one of his first acts was to order investigation into the Vatican Bank, and that got him killed, poisoned, according to David Yallop. And the guy who came in after him, John Paul II, the Polish fellow who they then turned into a saint, recently, his saintly act was to conceal the was to end the Vatican Bank inquiry and restore all of the mobsters to their positions that, that his predecessor had demoted. But in the course of that book, and what they discovered is there was a whole network of something called P2, which was an elite criminal body operating within the Vatican and the Italian government, involving most of the top corporate, political, military leaders in Italy, tied to right-wing dictatorships and all over the world, and using Vatican Bank money to fund military coups, the arms industry, all sorts of stuff. As a matter of fact, the Vatican has since then heavily invested in the big pharmaceutical industry, because the Vatican historically has used kids in Catholic orphanages, Indian schools, and others as guinea pigs to try out drugs for the big pharma cartels. That's a whole area that our common law court is going to investigate in our next case in the docket. We've already investigated the genocide in Canada case, and that's going to be posted actually on Monday at itccs.org. But these cases are showing that the Vatican is clearly, you know, implicated in major international corporate interests that are have got a lot of blood on their hands, and this is all coming out now.
Well, of course, they have a long history of genocide and inquisitions and murder and so on.
Yep.
And so forth. So that's no secret. The Pope was also deeply involved with the Nazi movement, which has been whitewashed. And you found that some experiments were being done on children by Germans in Canada. Is that right?
Right. Yes. At the first public tribunal we held, the only independent tribunal that's ever been held in Canada into these Indian schools, and I don't really like calling them schools because they were internment camps under the guise of education, where children rarely got any education. They worked as slave labor, basically, and were indoctrinated with religion. Those were the two main purposes of these places. But one of the things that we found out was in the connecting Indian hospitals and the schools, eyewitnesses came forward to describe how in the 1930s and after World War II, so before and after World War II, there were German-speaking doctors working regularly in these hospitals. One woman describes actually in the late 1940s seeing the SS tattoo on one of these guys' arms. And they were doing all sorts of experimental projects, not just sterilizing and using the kids as in drug testing, which often killed these kids, but sensory deprivation, weird experiments that, you know, they were even describing skin grafting, and one woman described the doctor trying to do eye color change experiments, which is interesting because that's exactly what Josef Mengele was doing at Auschwitz. So, you know, Project Paperclip, which people have probably read about, brought over something like 1,200 or more Nazi scientists after the war to work in the rocket program, but also the mind control experiments that the CIA pioneered in MKUltra.
Mm-hmm.
Program.
This
was done with a lot of Nazi scientists at hospitals and Indian schools across Canada and the U.S. So we've had eyewitnesses come forward to describe this, and a certain amount of documents to confirm this as well.
Yes, I have verified all of that for myself. In fact, I was just reading today that Homeland Security is the wet dream of the elite to establish a force that can work within the, quote, homeland, unquote,
yeah,
and literally squash all dissent. And there are many people in the United States that believe that that move, that we're going to be the next on the list of genocide, that there has been no stopping, and that the American people, especially the middle class and the lower class, are next, and that there are detention camps already set up, ready to go, and waiting for whatever the plans are on the table. So doesn't seem like... Yeah, go ahead.
The thing that the people need to know, another good book is The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars, Marrs, and he shows he documents really well how the whole Nazi apparatus was transported right over to the U.S. after the war. Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence on the Eastern Front, set up the CIA and the McCarthy-era State Department, fashioned the whole Cold War ideology, brought over dozens of SS officers and Gestapo to fund and like work in the CIA. And they, when you look at what happened, the Richard Nixon was funded. The guy who set him up in politics was a Florida mafioso who was working directly with these Nazis. And the a member of the Romanian Iron Guard who actually paid for Nixon's first campaign. Now, Cheney and Rumsfeld and all those guys got their training in the 1970s in the Nixon cabinet. And their whole attitude was to set up a government within the government. The whole secret government system was fashioned in the Nixon administration and implemented in the Project for a New American Century people, PNAC, which led to 9/11. So there's a direct conveyor belt between bringing over these Nazis after the war and the totalitarian state that America's sinking into right now. And I think it's part of that whole, you know, kind of corporate system that Hitler pioneered and which is being picked up all over the world now, where corporations and government get together, they abolish all liberties, and there is no democracy anymore. And I think we all have experiences of that now, what's happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And most people aren't aware that the Bush family is deeply involved with the Nazi movement.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
The other thing is that it has actually been growing over the decades and has gained an enormous foothold in underground bases, in advanced technologies, secret technologies, and there are plans to rise again, you know, as you just said, the Fourth Reich by Jim Mars.
Well, that's true. And on the other hand, though, one of the reasons people don't see it is because it's masked behind normally kind of, quote, benign institutions like, like churches, where, when you look at the ties between big churches and these, you know, kind of horrible people operating them, it's the last place people look. And on the other hand, when people wake up to it, there's a lot of people leaving the Catholic Church now. Over 30,000 people in Austria alone left the church last year. A lot of people are waking up, but it's a question of, well, what do we do now? And that's one of the reasons we started our common law courts, because trying to bring this through the existing court system is a dead end. It's consistently blocked. They're not allowed under international law to even prosecute institutions, only individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's why we need the new kind of legal system that they invented after World War II to prosecute war criminals who are in high office. And that's, you know, what we're in the process of doing.
What are some of the charges that are going to be levied when those documents are delivered to the Vatican? And how immune are they, given that the Vatican is set up as its own city and has its own police force?
Well, again, under international law, that doesn't make a difference. Any government leader can be put on trial for crimes against humanity. What the common law court that we've just concluded has charged the Pope and 30 other people, including the Queen of England and the Prime Minister of Canada, with two things: crimes against humanity and a criminal conspiracy to perpetrate and cover up that crime. And entered 150 exhibits, which you can see online at itccs.org on the November 6th and January 30th postings. We presented the entire case, and on Monday we're delivering the verdict and the sentence, which again is going to be at itccs.org. And essentially, that and the other court cases being brought through the International Criminal Court are all charging the Pope and these church leaders with the same thing, and that is basically a criminal conspiracy to protect those who are harming children and to cover up crimes of genocide in the past. A lot of the stuff, like take even the Indian schools that were set up all across Canada and America, where these atrocities all happened, they were initially set up by the Jesuits, you know, the Black Robes, who created the plan for how to exterminate non-Catholic populations that goes back over 500 years. So, you know, this is a long historical crime, and the courts around the world have refused to take on the church, so now we realize that we need citizen-driven courts to do that.
Now, I'm aware that the English, the UK, that is the Queen, is behind a lot of the old opium traffic, as are all the countries, including the United States, funneling those drugs in. And what are some of the allegations that include the royal family in England?
Well, it's at a general level, because they are still the formal head of Canadian government and the Church of England, which helped run a lot of these death camps they call residential schools in Canada. But Elizabeth Windsor herself has been charged by eyewitnesses with having abducted Native children from one of these schools. There was a man, William Coombs, who as a young boy saw Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip show up at a Catholic residential school in British Columbia in October 1964 and leave in the company of 10 children who were never seen again. William Coombs was going to go public with that. He had spoken about it on my radio show in Vancouver. And then before he came over to England, he was called into a Catholic hospital and given injections, went into a coma, and then they pulled him off life support after less than 2 days. They just killed him.
Wow.
And he was the sole surviving witness to that action by the Queen. Buckingham Palace has not responded to any of our letters or summonses, of course, but it's made quite a splash in England. And it's like with the Jimmy Savile case. People know these people are certainly accused, some fairly good evidence of these things, but the fact that they're not responding says a lot. You know, if your reputation is being threatened, normally you defend it. You don't hide behind silence. That, under the law, says that you're not contesting the charge against you, and it's an admission of guilt under the law to stay silent.
Mm-hmm. Well, the truth is the truth. You know, you can't. And if the truth has been covered up all these decades and generations, which it has, obviously, it doesn't take a lot of digging to get to it, really. Then it's time for the truth to come out, and for the people who have been responsible for these crimes and who have covered them up and who have perpetrated even worse things to be held accountable.
That's right.
So one of the things I wanted to mention was that during this show, whatever we're saying about the Catholic Church or those who are the leaders within it has no bearing on those who have faith and who believe that they are doing the right thing, who are not involved with any of these things, or any of the millions of followers who are completely unaware of that. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, people are aware that we're not issuing a blanket statement about everyone that's involved with the Catholic Church, but it might be a good time to reconsider using that church as a stepping stone to God when you can get it, you can go directly yourself, and that's always been the case.
Absolutely, and we're not attacking people's beliefs. What we're saying is you're free to believe anything you want as long as it doesn't harm somebody else, and
right.
as long as you're not paying for criminal bodies, and every time anyone puts money in the collection plate, that's exactly what they're doing. But even taxpayers are forced to subsidize the Vatican. There's a law called there are treaties between the Vatican Bank and over 120 countries around the world called financial concordats. And taxpayers' money is actually funneled to the Vatican Bank, if you can believe it, including my understanding is that America has a concordat with the Vatican Bank. I know Canada and England does. Spain alone paid €250 million last year to the Vatican Bank. So it would be worth, if people in America are listening, to write to your congressman and say, is there a financial agreement channeling taxpayers' money to support this criminal institution? Because if so, it's got to stop.
Good idea. Good idea. One of the things that hit the Internet pretty quickly after the Pope announced his resignation was the prophecy of Father Malachi about the Pope, this Pope as being the 111th, and that the last Pope will be named Peter, who is the 112th. Do you give any stock to those prophecies or not?
Well, you know, the thing about prophecies is they're prone to interpretation and reinterpretation over the centuries, and I've never seen a good solid source. These tend to be church sources, and not sure entirely what the agenda is all the time and people putting that out. But I do know that their calculation is a bit off, because they don't include a number of popes that were disinherited. There was a period in the 13 and 1400s where there's several rival popes all at the same time. They don't count them. They also don't count Pope Joan, the woman, a woman who snuck in pretending to be a man, and then in the 10th century, and then was killed when they found out she was a woman. He was a woman. So, you know, if you count all those guys in, you don't actually have 110. So, I mean, yeah, it's who you believe really on that. But regardless of the prophecy, I do believe the Vatican is coming down. It just lost so much credibility, and people see through it now in many ways. So, I think, I mean, ultimately, who knows, right? I mean,
Right. Well, we're so close to the event that we certainly will find out. We don't have to wait. It's not like 2012 being 10 years away. It's over, and we're in 2013 now. One of the things that I'm aware of is that the Vatican has funded a lot of projects through DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And so they're very well invested in that and probably in a lot of black projects. One can only go so far with the speculation or research because of the depth of secrecy. But are there a lot of secrets? We know that there are church secrets, things that have been confiscated over the years, truths about figures like Christ, perhaps. What is your take on that?
Well, there's a lot that is definitely being concealed. I know because a source that came to me, her uncle was a cardinal from Canada, and he actually showed her around the Vatican archives in the late 1960s. Mm. She said she saw stuff in there that would blow your mind, which had a lot of cultic significance. I mean, they had skulls, for example, of people resting on shelves. They had a list of everyone they had ever, the Inquisition had ever interrogated and tortured. They also have evidence from an archaeological expedition that the Vatican commissioned to Cyprus in the late 1950s. And apparently they found archaeological evidence about the real nature of Jesus as a man, not as a divinity, but as a man. And they had solid proof of this, and of course they're sitting on it, because it blows their whole mythology to ruins. Mm-hmm. And what I remember this woman told me, and she's fairly old now, but she said, her uncle said, you know, even though you're my niece and everything, there's nothing I can do to protect you if you ever tell anybody about this. You know, so she didn't. I mean, I was the first one she had ever told in all that time. But it shows you some. She said it really surprised her because beneath the Vatican archives, there's a whole military-protected, state-of-the-art, highly, you know, high-tech underground facility where she said it was the size of a football field. And it was the secret archives of the Vatican, right there under where the Vatican Bank is in the Vatican City. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot that needs to be opened up. And I do, you know, we do have people who have been giving us information about more of this. So we hope more of this is going to come out in the year ahead.
How many of those around the Pope directly, for instance, in the conclave that's going to be meeting, are directly involved with all this? It seems that all of the people at the top levels would have to be aware of most of the information that we've been sharing on the show tonight and a lot more.
All of it. You don't get into that position without A, knowing, and B, having a lot of dirt on you so that you can be controlled.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons they. When I was in Rome last time, it was 2010, I had a meeting. We had some really good press conferences where the whole Italian media were there, and we had conferences with several Italian senators who wanted to support our work about the genocide in Canada. One of the Italian senators said that there's a whole understanding that the reason Ratzinger was put in was because he had so much. He was so implicated in a lot of this cover-up of the child trafficking and, you know, the child rape going on all over the church, that they put him in there deliberately so he could be controlled and also so he would one day take the fall for this stuff. And it looks like that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But the senator said at the same time to me, and he was senior, he was a retired man, he'd been in Italian politics for like half a century, he said, the mafia and the government and the Vatican, they're all the same people, and there's only one moral issue for them, and that's their money. And you know, that's why it's one corporation you're dealing with. It's not so. Yeah, everybody in that system knows exactly what's going on, and they're doing their best to worm their way out of it. But it's going to be harder for them now to do that, I think.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Who would be some of the people that would be able to call up the Pope and tell him that they wanted something done? I mean, obviously, the level of control continues up the ladder. Would this include corporate heads that you are aware of?
And well, you know, you hear a lot of names and everything. You know, the real string pullers, you don't hear their names, of course. And
right.
You know, we've seen references to a lot of, like all over North America, a lot of Chinese investment buying up the debts of countries all over the world. And of course, Arab oil interests very deeply involved with the Vatican. But, I mean, the actual players, you know, there's, like I say, there's an elite within Italy, including the prime minister and that, who are closely tied in with this old kind of mafiosa group in the Vatican. But the individuals, I think, don't matter as much as the systems we're dealing with. And
right.
The figureheads come and go, but it's the system you've got to understand in order to try to dismantle it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. From what you're noticing with the allegations that are coming through to be delivered to the Vatican, what are the most shocking allegations that need to be pursued legally?
Well, the direct orders coming from the Vatican to, as happened 3 years ago, when the Vatican representative for Ireland, the Papal Nuncio to Ireland, directly ordered Irish bishops to not cooperate with police investigations in child rapists among the clergy, and to protect and move around those child rapists. It was a direct order right from the Pope. And that's one of the pieces of evidence they're trying to nail Ratzinger with, and the whole College of Cardinals, because they all facilitated that. What he's doing there is not just protecting child rapists. He's intervening in the laws of another country, in the internal affairs of another country, and telling the citizens of that country to break the laws of that nation. That's called international obstruction of justice, and under international law, it can put you away for 20 years. You know, the Irish Prime Minister, the Taoiseach there, Edna Kenny, had to make a comment after that and slap the hand of the Vatican, and they even withdrew their ambassador to Rome, if you can believe it, for a little while. Mm. You know, for Ireland to do that is quite amazing. But it shows you how desperate the Vatican's getting that they would do that kind of thing. But that forms a part of the charges made against the Vatican. It also includes such things as engaging in direct crimes against humanity, for example, funding these experimentation programs on children in Catholic schools, Indian schools and that, covering up genocide, destroying evidence related to mass graves where there's children, all of this stuff. I mean, it's all in the evidence at itccs.org.
Mm. Well, you know, your book, Hidden from History, Hidden No Longer, starts out with something that I thought would be interesting to read on the air. You take quotes from people who were in those Indian schools, and one of the first ones is Irene Favell. Do you mind if I read this?
Well, please do.
She says, "I'm 75. I went to residential school in Musquequan from 1944 to 1949, and I had a rough life. I was mistreated in every way. There was a young girl, and she was pregnant from a priest there. And what they did, she had her baby, and they took the baby and wrapped it up in a nice pink outfit, and they took it downstairs where I was cooking dinner with a nun. And they took the baby into the furnace room, and they threw that little baby in there and burned it alive. All you could hear was this little cry like, 'Ugh!' And that was it. You could smell that flesh cooking." And that's just one of many stories.
Yep, one of many. And Irene Favell is, we actually have a video of her speaking in the evidence at, I believe it's in the first session of the court, which is November 6th at itccs.org, the November 6th posting. That video of her was up exactly 24 hours on the Internet. It was on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation TV, actually had that up on their network, but it was quickly taken down, but we grabbed it before they did it. You know, they rewrite history all the time and get rid of this evidence, but there's so many witnesses in a week that I meet who have exactly those stories, but the Canadian media will never cover that. There's a complete blackout on all those stories. They really sanitize the whole issue and say, oh, yeah, some children were hurt, but we've apologized and we're resolving it now. They never talk about those stories.
What do you think it will take to break the back of the controlled media that basically is a mind-washing and brainwashing tool?
I think we're breaking it already. They're doing the show tonight, spreading
right.
the information through the Internet. Like, there's over 20 million Americans who listen to public radio and alternative, you know, blog radio programs. You know, that's a lot of people. And, you know, when you show the evidence to people who are even caught up in the, what I call people in the bubble, you know, that are in the believe what they see on the TV, even they are very cynical about people in power in the church. And, you know, latest opinion polls is one of the most distrusted groups in society are clergy now. Because people are learning from this. They're not brainwashed anymore by the church. So I think we are having a real impact. You often don't see it. It's like most of it is like an iceberg. But when it counts, like, you know, we often hold protests outside and inside Catholic churches on Sundays. And people coming by, including cops, will say, you know, you're doing good work. Keep going. You know, we got to do something about those churches. I mean, we get that all the time from people. So I'm really hopeful that things are changing.
Does it ever make you feel wonder, being a member of the cloth yourself, that about the idea of evil versus that which is not evil?
How do you mean exactly?
Well, that there may be some kind of force that is operating in this world that is, how should I say, extremely dark.
Yep. Well. I would say that there is a force against life, and you know that you see that in everyday life all the time. But it takes an institutional form, and it seems to live and breed, especially in corporate institutions, where mm-hmm. those who rise up to the top of it are the ones with the least scruples, the least conscience, the ones most able to do amoral acts, mm-hmm. and corporate institutions breed that evil. But there's also a spirit in the world very much out to corrupt and destroy the human dignity, human love, justice, all of that. I've seen it. And as a matter of fact, when I was in Port Alberni, when I was a clergyman there, I took part in an exorcism, like a genuine one.
Mm.
I can tell you that when that woman, when the spirit left her, it was palpable. You could see it in her eyes, and you could feel it in the air as it left. It was a hideous presence. I have no other way of describing it. I've seen that same presence when I've done prison ministry, and I've interviewed and worked with psychopaths, child rapists, people like that, mm-hmm. serial killers. You see it in them. It's definitely, it's a form of possession, but it isn't, you know, the way the media kind of individualizes it all the time and say, this man is possessed. No, I think institutions get possessed by this, and they infect their members. It's at a corporate level. As a matter of fact, when you read in the Bible, Jesus refers to demon-possessed people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cases he describes is he speaks to one of these demons and he says, what is your name? Because in an exorcism, that's the first thing you do. You get the spirit to identify itself and so lose some of its power. And it says, we are legion, for we are many. It's a collective entity. It isn't just... You know, and so that's kind of a clue to what we're fighting, and I do very much believe this is ultimately a spiritual battle, and each one of us has to be armed within ourselves to fight it.
Absolutely. And it's so important for people to be able to move out of denial so that they can see. It's taking the rose-colored glasses off, and it's kind of like the movie They Live.
I love that movie.
Yeah, you know, and So we are getting a big dose of this, and I suspect that in the next few months and coming year that there will be massive revelations about the truth. The truth has been suppressed for so long. Yeah. If it weren't for people like you who committed their lives to opening this Pandora's box of horrors, we wouldn't know. We really wouldn't know, because the people who do know are killed off and history is rewritten. That's a fact.
Yes. Well, and it's important to know, too, that what we're dealing with is something whose nature is the lie.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus said he's the father of lies. Well, the only way these people can operate is through lies. And there's kind of a justifiable spirit of doubt these days among a lot of people, and skepticism about anything they hear. And that's because we all have that experience of what we're dealing with is essentially a huge lie. Once you step into the truth, it loses its power over you and it starts to collapse. I mean, I've seen that so many times. You know, that people, an institution you think is powerful isn't, because it just rests on people's obedience. And once you pull that away, it doesn't have any power.
Right, right. And isn't there kind of a chimera that is also embodied by this great lie that includes glamour and kind of a mystification of things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, religion is good at that. But
very.
Yeah.
A smoke and mirrors, literally, right?
Absolutely, you know. And I've never believed in religion. You know, I always think that it wars against genuine spirituality, and the fact that truth is within us, the kingdom of heaven is within us, not in an institution.
Yes, absolutely. And even if one did believe in a religion, it would be almost impossible, if not impossible, to continue that belief in the actual form of the religion, knowing what that religion has done.
I don't understand. I really don't understand, to be honest, Lance, how people can stay in these churches once they know this stuff. It shows you the extent of mind control and soul control going on. You know?
Yes, it is mind control. And it's pervasive, and it's going on at frequencies that we can't perceive and in ways that we can't register with our senses, because it has become so refined and so technological with fluoride in the water, which they used in Germany. Chemtrails in the skies that are going on, and you never hear a word about it on the news, spraying trillions of pounds of horrible things in the air, and, you know, GMO foods. I wouldn't be surprised if some of those paperclip Nazis were taken over to Monsanto.
Yep, there is actually Monsanto is tied in very directly to IG Farben and those Christians, you're right.
So this is all stuff that needs to come out before we can move on, and we're caught in a web by a spider, and the spider is sucking the blood out of us, and if we don't wake up, we're going to end up, you know, dried old husks, and there won't be anything left. So the price.
Well, you're right. This is a battle. This is a.
It is.
I believe a final war of extermination against the human race. And
absolutely,
we have to wake up to that. There's nothing more important than this. You know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we cannot look at look to our leaders and institutions for guidance because they're behind it and they're controlled by this, by the unseen
hand.
They're
paid by it.
Yep. What are some of the things that you'd like to share with us that people may not know about that you feel are important for us to become aware of?
Well, there's a lot. You know, in a way, it's hard to summarize in just an hour. But first of all, people need to take the time to look at a lot of our evidence. So I would say go to hiddennolonger.com. That's where my book is. That's where our documentary film on Repentant is, at hiddennolonger.com. And starting Monday, the court verdict of the first case about genocide in Canada is going to be up at itccs.org, and I really urge people to follow that. Generally, I think that the new things we're learning about have to do with now the connection between these crimes of the church and the bigger corporate and military actors, you know, the things we've been talking about. It's really one system.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not dealing with the crimes of the church as a separate category, but it was one aspect of this bigger beast. And I would say to people that we need to unite across all our differences and different causes we're involved in, different concerns, find the common ground, what links all of these crimes, but also links our resolve to make a new world and the vision we have for what we want to create. So it's bringing people together all the time that is increasingly hard, but we have to put increasing effort into doing it. And so, you know, I think that's generally what I'd say to people. Don't wait for somebody like me. Take action yourself. Start documenting these crimes. We're encouraging people to set up their own investigations and even their own common law courts, which any 12 citizens can do. It's recognized in American law and British law. It's called necessity defense or a right of claim, where citizens can, if the authorities aren't protecting their communities and their children, we have to, and that's totally legitimate. It's not vigilante justice. It's not any of the stuff you hear in the corporate media. It's what we have to do now, even just to protect our kids. So I'd say start talking about how to do that, and if people want to contact me, I'm very available all the time. I'm at hiddenfromhistory1, like the number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And like I say, I'll be coming to the States in April and in May and June to Europe.
Ah, where are you going? And where are you coming in the States? And are you sharing your information at specific places?
Oh yeah, I'm in first week in April. I'll be up and down the East Coast. I'm starting in New York City, going to Washington D.C. and the Baltimore area, down to the Southeast, and then after Europe in the summer, I'm carrying on through the Midwest out to the Atlantic, out to the Pacific Coast. So it's two phases in America: in April and then in July after I come back from Europe.
Wonderful.
But I will post that.
Oh, good.
I'm sorry.
Good. And there are a lot of people following your work, I know, and have been for some time. So there is some protection in the number of people that are following your path.
I know. Definitely.
The more out there you are, the better.
Yeah.
Although, you know, anybody that takes on your path is probably not concerned with dying or life after death.
Well, you know, yeah, I worry about it sometimes, but it's not really even worry anymore. It's like I do feel that I'm in the hands of something much bigger, and I trust that power, and I trust as long as I'm doing what's right in my own conscience and what's based on truth, then I'm not afraid of anything or anyone. And I think often when I do get those moments of fear, I think of all those little kids who are going to suffer if we don't do this work, and those kids lying in the ground who need to come home, right, who died because of the system. So that's what keeps me going, one of the things.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I couldn't help but think that the nature of the indigenous crimes against the Canadian tribes mirrors the indigenous slaughters of the United States, because they were about the same period of time, weren't they?
Absolutely. They were, you know, the border is fictitious. It was the same nations on both sides are targeted by the same system. I'm working now with a few groups in America that are beginning to sue the Jesuits, especially for their Indian schools in North Dakota, South Dakota, in Washington. I even spoke to a Native woman who, in the year 1971, saw a Jesuit priest bury a newborn baby under the floorboards of a Catholic church in Omak, Washington. You know, again, like the Iron Fable case, because the baby was the result of a priest raping one of the Indian girls. The Native people went right up to the FBI, and they wouldn't investigate because it was a Catholic church. They never even exhumed under the floorboards of that church looking for the bones of that baby.
Wow.
So those are the kind of crimes we're unveiling in America now, too, at these Indian schools. And that's one of the reasons, or one of the things I'm doing when I travel across the states in April and in the summer, is to work with those groups and get that out there. So there's a lot of work to help research, document all of this stuff if people want to help.
Now, aren't all these deaths part of a much larger multi-generational plan of eugenics and population culling, so that the elite end up with all the advanced technologies and with a smattering of slaves, basically? I mean,
yes.
We basically are slaves already. Let's get that straight. And anybody that thinks that they're free is living in an illusion. We're essentially an enslaved species. And Agenda 21 is a United Nations version of implementing that, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's all true. And, you know, what they're trying out on us now, they tried out on the Indians first. So that's why we have to, another reason to support the remaining Native nations is because they have a lot to teach us about what's been happened in them for centuries, because it's you know, they perfected the techniques on the Natives so they could do it on everybody.
Right.
And they've learned lots of ways to survive this, and the ones who are still alive. So we do have another need to support them for that reason. But it's also, they were exterminated, and we are being targeted for monetary reasons, too. They, Natives in America still sit on uranium in the Dakotas, a lot of resources. Most of the uranium in Canada, well, Canada's one of the major uranium producers, that funds the U.S. military, that allows the depleted uranium weapons, comes from northern Saskatchewan, where Cree Indians are dying at an enormous rate from radiation poisoning. It kills them off, and it's very lucrative at the same time. So it's all of that, you know. And that's why this is something that is targeted at all of us.
Wow. Well, we have just a few minutes left. Anything that you'd like to share with us in the last few minutes, and then make sure that everybody knows where your websites are again,
right.
That would be great.
Okay, well, you know, like I say, this is something affecting all of us now. These aren't crimes in the past. Any child today can be targeted by this system of organized child trafficking. Keep your kids away from Catholic churches, because if they're harmed, the priest is under orders to cover it up. And learn about these crimes. HiddenNoLonger.com, ITCCS.org, especially on Monday morning, where our verdict from the first court case in the common law court of genocide in Canada is going to be posted at ITCCS.org. And please write to me, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And thank you so much, for Lance, for having me on. I hope we can do it again.
I do too, Kevin. You have my admiration and all my best wishes, and thank you for coming on. Yes, I would love to have you back, and I will have you back. So thank you so much.
We'll stay in touch about all that. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Good night, everybody.